Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday live in now sunny Los Angeles for a long time. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and Sirius XM Channel 83. Al Michaels joins us, top of next hour. He's always a great listen. Russell Wilson will be joining us at the top of hour number 3. Peter Schrager this hour and Joy Taylor is joining me live from her secluded grotto somewhere near Hollywood / Beverly Hills / Century City. How are you, Joy?
I'm doing good. I finally gave in last night, Colin. I've been pretty good about, like, you know, only getting off the diet once a week.
Yeah.
Being kind of careful since I'm not walking around as much.
Yeah.
Had to get Fatburger last night.
There we go. Let's hear it for Fatburger.
And a shake.
There you go. My daughter yesterday. See, I was eating yesterday. Yesterday was just an eating day. All day long, I couldn't stop eating, and it felt great. Well, it's great to have you in. By the way, I have to note this. The Last Dance was that Michael Jordan documentary. It had massive numbers. It beat all but a couple of NBA games this year. And the only games that it didn't beat were the Christmas Day games when we're all sitting home. So it's unbelievable. And now my question is going to be to you, and I think you know the answer is, oh, my God, what is the draft going to get? As we have predicted, the draft is going to get record numbers. It will be the most watched draft of all time. It will not be technically perfect. There will be glitches. It won't be as snazzy. But you cannot be paralyzed by perfection. And it should be noted, even with dealing with this virus, stop worrying about the optics. Remember the NFL reporter 3 weeks ago? We can't have the draft. There's blood on the hands of the NFL. Stop it. You can't be paralyzed by perfection. You got to hold the draft. We have our advertisers slowly coming back. We got to get past this. A lot of sports actually work. NASCAR, golf, horse racing. They all work. You could do a boxing match, UFC, tennis. There's stuff that's going to work. We're all just kind of waiting when we can implement team sports because horse racing's going on. Golf's coming up. NASCAR's coming up. Some stuff works. Guy in a car, guy in a horse, two people and an official. Somebody wears a mask. But again, what I think Sunday really illustrates, because the rating would have been big. Obviously, Christmas NBA games get bigger ratings because we're all home. And obviously, we're all home for this, so it gets a big rating. But it really does illustrate the lasting power of Michael Jordan. I would say brands are the opposite of perfume. You can always tell a really, really cheap perfume because if a woman's wearing a cheap perfume and she walks by you and you can smell it and she leaves, and you can still smell it 4 and 5 seconds later, that's a really cheap, tacky perfume. Brands, it's the opposite. The longer you can sense them, the longer you feel you can taste them and smell them, the better they are. Here is how great Michael Jordan's brand is. He has the greatest brand in the history of American sports. So last year's shoe sales in the NBA, just consider this. LeBron shoe sales, KD's, Steph's, Kobe, Harden, Kyrie, and Damian Lillard combined sold 129 million shoes. Michael Jordan sold 130 million by himself. He is our Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth died in 1948, stopped playing far before that. And Major League Baseball, a few years ago, added an asterisk to the home run total to protect Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth had a brand before there were brands. He was the first pre-brand brand. And there have been other great brands, nothing close to Michael. And there's an old saying, and I've heard this for years and years. Oh, everybody's replaceable. in my business. Everybody's replaceable. No, no, no. Howard Stern wasn't replaceable. Howard Stern left FM radio, and the industry died. It died. It just died. Nobody listens to FM. It just doesn't do very well, right? Steve Jobs left Apple. They had to go get Steve Jobs again because he was not replaceable. Muhammad Ali, boxing has never had in the heavyweight division somebody that good-looking, that great, that socially impactful, that polarizing, and that glamorous. They've never replaced him. They have never replaced him. I don't believe there'll ever be a Tiger Woods on the tour. And the NBA to this day, all those shoe numbers, Kobe's and Harden's and Steph's and LeBron and KD, Michael's been retired for 20 years. I mean, here's the power of Michael. When you're they talk about when your brain protects you from bad memories as a child. It's like a protective mechanism in our brain. Michael Jordan affects our brain. We protect his legacy. We didn't just watch him. We loved him. And it protects us. It's as if the Washington Wizards years don't exist. He was still in his 30s. He could not lead a team to the playoffs. Half the league at that point got into the playoffs. He couldn't get into the playoffs. He never looked in great shape. He was goosing his stats to average 20 a game the last year. It's like it didn't exist. Everybody says, oh, Michael took 2 years off to play baseball. No, he didn't. He took 1 year off. And then he came back and got eliminated in the Eastern semis by Orlando. That literally doesn't exist. It's just disappeared into the, like a smokestack. You see it for a second, and the smoke goes, it just disappears into the ether. That's the power of Michael Jordan. He was irreplaceable. Never forget, LeBron is making a movie now. It's a sequel to a Michael Jordan movie. Never forget that Derek Jeter was the first or second most popular player in baseball. He wore Jordan's gear. The top five or six college programs, football programs in America, many of them wear the Jordan brand. He was a basketball player. But maybe most of all is the saying that Michael Jordan created. Michael Jordan was so great at basketball that there became a term used in America. If you were really great at baking, oh, you're the Michael Jordan of baking. You became the Michael Jordan of landscapers. This guy is the Michael Jordan of magicians. That term, for a long time, existed. And you saw it Sunday night in the documentary. Just don't. Everybody feels better about themselves when you say everybody's replaceable. It makes us all feel better, right? We're all human. You haven't separated too much from me. No, there are people that are irreplaceable. The NBA has still never replaced Michael Jordan. All right, let's move to this. Nick Saban said yesterday, you pass on Tua, you're going to regret it. This is what Dabo Swinney, remember Dabo Swinney told us about Deshaun Watson? Remember what Dabo Swinney said? Deshaun Watson's the Michael Jordan of football players. So yesterday, Mac Brown came on. And there was a sentence. I'm going to give you about 20 seconds of Mac Brown. But listen for the key sentence in terms of Tua's injury.
If he's great enough that I think he can win the Super Bowl and the medical team says he's going to be fine with our modern medicine, as long as the doctors say he'll be fine, you just move on. And I've talked to a lot of the scouts about Tua and said, will this matter? And they've said the scouts will only look at his ability. The medical team will get the analogy of whether he's physically ready to go or not, but that'll have nothing to do from the evaluation side of his draft.
Did you notice Mac Brown, and Brian Kelly had talked about this earlier in last week, is that they talked about it, modern medicine. What can modern medicine do? That's why you have to be careful about comparing this to Bo Jackson's hip injury. Just think of what modern medicine has done since Bo Jackson. Hepatitis C no longer exists. 20% of cancers solved. Stem cell research. We now have 3D, I'm not joking, 3D body parts. They call it 3D organ printing. My son has a 3D printer. They can print body parts. Stem cell research, cancer numbers down. Hepatitis C is gone. the world's first artificial pancreas, hormones for heart treatment, a torn ACL, career used to be probably over. Then it was 18 months. Now some guys are better in 6, 7 months. You have to consider the modern advances. We also have a precedent. We can look at the Bo Jackson situation and look the mistakes we made. This is what we'll do with the virus if there's a second or a third wave of the virus. What mistakes did we make in the first wave of the virus? That's why I'm very encouraged about getting out of this virus eventually. I don't think the second wave will be as bad as the first wave, and the third wave won't be as bad as the second wave, and the fourth wave won't be, and there'll be waves of this. But when my mom grew up, there was literally one way. When my mom came to America from Great Britain, her entire life, there was one way to finance a home. 30-year mortgage. That was it. Now there's a conventional mortgage. There's FHA loans. There's home equity lines of credit. There's seller financing. There's adjustable rate mortgages. There's USDA loans and VA loans and 203K loans. And there's 50 ways to finance a home. America's smart. We have advancements in technology. Good God, look at technology. Look at Silicon Valley. It changes every 18 months. Financing your home, medical advances. So, again, I think Mack Brown and Brian Kelly talked about, well, I mean, with modern medicine, they're seeing players recruited they have get hurt and get back on the field, like really, really fast. And I know hips are scary and hips aren't ankles. But I do think if you're Miami and you have, over the next 2 years, 25 draft picks, I think you roll the dice. If you're the Chargers and have two good receivers and two pass rushers and three good corners and two good running backs, I think you cobble together one of those players and some draft picks and you go, and if you can't get Herbert, you maybe roll the dice and get Tua. But you got to remember, things get better, things get solved, things get improved, and I think Tua is absolutely, like Nick Saban says, absolutely worth the risk.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I think people sometimes buy insurance, not just for your house or your car or something like that, but you buy insurance so if you screw up, you don't get penalized as punitively. And, you either go all in or you don't, to me. But you're seeing this in the NFL. So yesterday they had a virtual draft. And it should be noted, the XFL did a virtual draft. No problems. The WNBA just did a virtual draft. No problems. But the NFL is much bigger business. Much bigger business. And jobs pay seven figures for the best GMs. All GMs. And seven figures for, the coaches. Big seven figures. So they're buying insurance to protect their butt. So yesterday at 1 o'clock, the NFL held a virtual draft. And by 1:20, reporters were breaking stories. It's a disaster. It's man overboard. It's really chaotic. Bad GMs and bad coaches buying insurance so if their draft stinks, they can say to their owner, it was chaos. I mean, I had to do online scouting. I couldn't. There was no pro day. Go back and read the stories. It was what GM could overcome this sort of crisis? And then there's John Elway, who's a legend and has a net worth over $100 million. He probably wasn't spending a lot of time texting local beat guy to go to Twitter. Here's what John Elway, a grown-up, a successful man, said.
The draft went smoothly. It got off to a little bit of a hiccup when we first started, but other than that, it went really smooth. There were really no problems with it, so we got more comfortable with it. So it should be fine and go on without a glitch. I'm sure there'll be a couple glitches here and there, but actually for the first time, I thought it went pretty well.
Stanford guy, $100 million net worth guy, legend guy, securing himself guy. That's fine. Little glitch. You do get, before I ever did the Herd on Fox Sports Radio, we were doing run-throughs, and they were little glitches. And our first couple shows weren't great. You can argue our first year had some glitches, and it was fine, and we're grown-ups, and you overcome it. John Elway's like, yeah, it was a little glitch Cincinnati. It's fine. Everybody buying insurance. So when they whiff on the draft picks, which lots of teams historically do, I bet you the Patriots weren't sending this out. I bet you Elway We know Elway wasn't sending it out. I bet it wasn't Sean Payton. It's the second-tier guys holding on to their jobs. By the way, post-crisis, the winners in all industries are people that can adapt. Rigid people are going to struggle. Okay, you got to adapt. It's just like quarterbacks. What do we always say about quarterbacks? Anybody can throw a strike in a clean pocket. The great quarterbacks can throw with people hanging on them. The great quarterbacks have high completion percentages during blitzes. None of us, including NFL GMs and coaches over the next week, are going to be standing in a clean pocket. It's going to be muddy. There's going to be people hanging on you, and there's going to be chaos. And like great quarterbacks, the haves will flourish.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Al Michaels is joining. It'll be his 15th season as the voice of the NFL on NBC. He's the only commentator to call a World Series, a Super Bowl, an NBA Finals, and host the Stanley Cup Final for a television network. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been saying this, Al, that LeBron wants a season back because, you know, he doesn't have a ton left. And I'm looking at Al Michaels, and I'm thinking, you probably won't be doing this in 20 years. You are jonesing for football, am I right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, everybody who loves sports, Colin, everybody who loves the NFL wants it to come back, but there's no way you can predict what's going to go on. Nobody really knows anything. You hear 48 different timelines. They can start on time. They'll start in late November. They'll do this. They'll do that. They'll have a truncated schedule. They'll play the Super Bowl in March. They won't play until 2021. So I'm just sitting here watching the world go around, Colin. And I don't have any more of an idea, a better idea than anybody else does. All I know is that it's the first time in history we are all victims and suspects. We're victims because none of us signed up for this. I mean, this just came, and, right. And here we are. And we're suspects, as you know, when you walk down the street and you don't have a mask on, even if you do, that people are avoiding you like you've come in with an AK-47.
Right.
So it's a crazy time. Never seen anything like it. Never thought we would see anything like it. But here we are, and let's see how it all shakes out, because I don't have any idea.
Yeah, either do I. Some of these models that are predicting, fatalities, they change daily. I tell friends this. The only thing I know is social spacing seems to work, I think. I'm not even, Sweden didn't do it, and they're fine. So I don't know. Now, how do you pass your time? What does Al Michaels do on a Tuesday with no games?
You know, Colin, I've been trying to avoid myself. Now, what I mean by that is, the other night, I am watching the MLB Network, and all of a sudden, the first game of the 1995 World Series, Atlanta-Cleveland, pops up, and I'm doing the game with Tim McCarver and Jim Palmer. Now, over on NBCSN at that particular point is a Sunday night football game between Green Bay and Kansas City. A friend of mine calls and says, hey, you and Doc Rivers are announcing Lakers San Antonio, the game where Derek Fisher hits the shot with 0.4 seconds. That's on NBA TV. And my grandson says, hey, Pop, you're on Miracle on whatever it was on. So I'm thinking to myself, here I am. I'm just trying to stay underground. You know, the great thing is in the off season, I kind of fade away. And then when you come back, people say, oh, it's good to have you back. Now, it's like, get out of here. I can't get rid of you. And that's the way I feel right now.
Let's go back about a month and a half. I was shocked. I wasn't shocked Tom left. I was surprised. But Tampa, a place I lived, caught me off guard. They've been a little dysfunctional forever. And I think I didn't see Tom going from highly functional to a little bit dysfunctional or a lot dysfunctional. What did you make of the Tom. What did you make of the Tampa move?
Well, it's gotten a lot of publicity because I said recently that when Tom came into our meeting, we did New England at Baltimore, Colin, first, I think, Sunday in November. They were 8-0, and that defense was allowing, less than 10 points a game. The offense wasn't playing particularly well, but Brady was an undefeated quarterback, and one of the things he said in the meeting, kind of half-seriously, I'm the most unhappy 8-0 quarterback in football. And that got a lot of play. I mean, he said that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But then I said to him in this meeting, and, we've had 100 meetings with him, and I know Tom very, very well. I said, I'm going to lay odds of 43,000 to 1. You will never, ever wear another uniform beside New England. And, you know, I figured I'd get some sort of response from him. He just laughed. He kind of laughed and, you know, shook his head a little bit. And he wasn't going to give me the answer. I don't think he knew the answer. But one of our research people, Andy Freeland, plunked $2 down on the table. I took it. And I am now on the hook, Colin, for $86,000, thanks to Tom Brady. But you know what an installment plan paying $3 a year will look like, and that's what Andy's going to get. I may give him $5 the first time we go in there, but that's about it.
You know, the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary, you covered the NBA for, you know, years for, NBA Finals.
Right.
Give me your memories of Michael Jordan, perhaps your first memory.
Well, I didn't do any of his games because by the time I got in there, Michael had retired, even from the Wizards at that point. But my only experience with Michael, or my first anyway, I was in Hawaii. We were on Maui in 1998, and Michael had just retired again from the Bulls. He'd already played minor league baseball in the mid-90s, and I run into him on the beach, and I didn't know him. But, you know, we struck up a conversation. He said, "You play golf?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Well, you know, tomorrow we got a game. Why don't you meet me up at Wailea at 1 o'clock? Great. So I go over to Wailea, and Michael is there, and he's got the head pro, and he introduces me to the fourth guy, and he says, "Do you know Joe Morgan?" And we both laughed because when I did the Reds in the early 70s, of course I knew Joe Morgan. He played for the Big Red Machine at that point, so we're laughing. We had a great time. And then Michael is playing great golf. He probably has six or seven birdies. He had one shot out of a fairway bunker with a 5-iron, 200 yards, that almost went in, missed by an inch. And he was playing great and having a blast. So we go into the restaurant bar at Wailea afterwards. It's about 5 o'clock, and we're sitting maybe 50 feet from a television set, which is probably 27 inches, that sits on top of the bar. And this is at a time when Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire are chasing Roger Maris's record. Everybody's consumed in the sports world, and can they get there? So they each had like 50-something at that point. And ESPN is on. There's no sound. We look up, and there's a panel, the way they used to put the panel up. You know, you had a ton of statistical information. It's all sort of agatype. We can barely see it. And Joe and I get up from the table to get closer to the television to see if we can see if Sosa hit a home run. And Michael sits there and doesn't even squint, and he's reading every line. So Morgan and I look at each other like, can he really do this? And then we walked down into the parking lot, Joe and I, and we said, can you believe this guy's eyesight? I mean, you know, they talk about Ted Williams and what he could see, but Michael Jordan, from 50 feet away on a 27-inch screen, could read every number, including those in parentheses. And I said to Joe, can you imagine what that rim must have looked like from 18 feet out? He saw that in 4 or 5D, not 3D.
Yeah, you've got amazing stories. We were talking this morning as a staff that Michael's got the greatest sports brand of all time. Last year, he made more money, $130 million in shoes, than LeBron, Steph, KD, the late Kobe Bryant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving combined. Made sold 129 million shoes. Babe Ruth was a brand before brands existed. Go back to all the guys you have covered. Muhammad Ali jumps. You even did boxing, by the way. Al Michaels joining us. Mm-hmm. I always said Tiger felt massive to me. Ali, who is the second biggest brand to Jordan that you think the sports world is? Babe Ruth almost feels like it, that it's ever had.
Well, you know, you have to relate it, though, to the time, Colin. And I mean, Babe Ruth at one point was making so much more than anybody else. So, in other words, he was his own brand in those years. But, I mean, what was $100,000 then is, you tell me what it is right now, you know, several million.
Right.
So you can't compare the actual numbers with what took place 50, 60, 100 years ago. So, I mean, Ruth had to be a brand at that point. I mean, you know, he was big enough that, you know, they named a candy bar after him,
right,
down the line. And everybody knew who he was. I think everybody now knows who he was. The name is familiar to everybody. And, you know, so I go by generations. You know, if you look at Wayne Gretzky in Canada, could anybody have ever been any bigger in Canada than Wayne was?
Yeah.
And Michael And, I mean, Kobe was a tremendous brand as well. You know, he played, I guess, if you look at Michael 1, Kobe 2 in terms of brand recognition and longevity and all the rest, but they were very, very close. Tiger is a one-off in golf, though, too. Even in the years of Nicklaus and, you know, look, Palmer, go back to Palmer. Palmer may have been the first really gigantic brand in the 70s. They loved him. People emulated him. Just the walk that he had, smoking a cigarette, the whole thing. And Palmer was as big as it got in the sports world at that particular point. Then Jack came along. You know, Palmer had a little bit more of an outgoing personality than Jack did, and Gary Player was there as well. But, you know, but Gary didn't play in that many tournaments because he was from South Africa. And so he – but they were the big three. But Palmer was the biggest. And then when you get to Tiger, I mean, Colin, you know, there's nobody. Who's second in golf? Tell me who's second in golf to Tiger.
Well, Tiger is the walking Sopranos. He made me change my late Sunday viewing habits. You know what he did, Al? This is what Ollie did. When you can be great, Ollie was, have a personality, and be glamorous. Ollie was glamorous. Tiger changed my viewing habits.
Yeah.
No golfer, I love Jack. Nobody in golf has ever changed my viewing habits. I would be hanging out in a Sunday afternoon and be like, oh, God, I got to get to a television set. Tiger leads by 6 shots. I and you're a big golf guy, so you haven't golfed in too much. This must be driving you crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, because you golf every day.
Uh-huh. So you're right about Tiger, and especially, you know, you go to last year and the Masters, and everybody's talking about it. The whole country is consumed with it. The next day, what he was able to do, and he had so many of those things around him that made him what he was. I mean, he was not necessarily a guy that was a very cuddly, let's say, early in his career. I mean, he could be very standoffish. He could be off-putting in a way, but he's gotten a little bit better, a lot better, actually, in his golf dotage. I mean, he did that thing with Jim Nance the other day, which was really great. But back to boxing, Ali, you know what's funny? One of the great things this weekend, I just happened to come upon ESPN had a whole bunch of great fights back-to-back-to-back. I think it was Sunday. One of them I did the Hagler-Hearns fight back in 1985. This baby pops up, which was great. That was 8 minutes. It was fantastic. But they had the trilogy of Ali Frazier, and I forgot how fantastic that was. And even my wife is sitting there looking at him and going, wow, you know, he's so much more than a boxer. He's a showman, the way he's mugging with Frazier, the whole thing, looking at the crowd. He had everything going for him. I mean, everything. And, of course, you know, then he'd get together with Cosell, and that made for a great show, a terrific show. He understood it. Ali was something unbelievably special. And you know the other thing I found? Oh, my God. It just dawned on me right now. So Jerry Parenteau, who was a very young man at the time, was the promoter of that fight in New York in 1971 at Madison Square Garden. So he had Don Dunphy, who was the number one boxing announcer at that time, doing the blow-by-blow. He brought in Archie Moore as one of the analysts, and the other analyst was Burt Lancaster. And Burt Lancaster was tremendous because they had all of the pregame stuff and pre-fight and post-fight stuff. Burt Lancaster was tremendous. He was better than Cosell, Colin, I'm telling you.
You know, it's interesting. As a sportscaster, if you ask me, I get one ticket, and I can do Olympic event, I can do Super Bowl, March Madness, NBA Final, World Series, I would say no. Give me the best fight. It's my first job out of college, Al, was being a broadcaster for a AAA baseball team in Vegas and a sportscaster for the NBC. To this day, it's the only thing my wife cares about in sports. She'll go to a boxing match. I would always pick a great boxing match over any other sport. Now, you broadcast all of them. If I told you one final broadcast, it's the best fight in a decade, it's the best NFL game in a decade, or the best game seven in a decade, you've got one broadcast left. What would you choose?
Well, that's a good question. I've been lucky enough to do multiple World Series and Super Bowls that have been phenomenal. You know, you make a good point. There are very few things like a fight. First of all, those other games last 3 hours or longer.
Yeah.
A fight can last 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Or it can last 36 minutes if they go all 12 rounds. I look back at Hagler-Hearns. That was 8 minutes, and it was breathtaking.
Yes.
It was. I mean, I did the fight with Al Bernstein. I'm sitting there, and at one point, I swear, Colin, Hearns hits Hagler. It's right above me. I'm right there underneath him. And he hits Hagler so hard that it reminded me of like a cartoon where somebody gets hit and their face implodes. Their face becomes concave.
Yeah.
And I thought, just for, you know, a millionth of a second, he killed him. I thought that Hagler got killed. And instead, the next thing you know, Hagler's jumping on Hearns and throwing combinations at him. So it was one of those fights where that first round was insane.
Yeah.
Completely. And you knew it couldn't go very far, and it didn't. And it only went 8 minutes, and Sports Illustrated's cover, the headline on the cover the next week was 8 minutes of fury. But you're right, and the great thing about that fight was it was so highly anticipated. And you know, very often we get...
Yes.
It doesn't live up to the hype. And we go, oh, you know, well, not as good as it was okay. This was a multiple of the hype, and the hype was gigantic. This was the one fight people wanted to see in the mid-'80s, Hagler-Hearns, and they got it, and this thing ended in a hurry. But, boy, if you look at that, you go, what a fight. And I think Ring Magazine ranked it either the greatest fight of the 20th century or the greatest round of the 20th century or maybe even both. But nothing could top that. So going back to what you said, I mean, yeah, you know, the excitement that precedes a fight like that, a big fight, a big heavyweight championship fight or a Hagler-Hearns type of fight in a lower class, there's nothing like
there's
it.
Nothing.
It's very special.
Yeah, no, I tell people this all. I've told you this before. If you're 20 years old, there's two or three things in sports that you never got. One of them is Al Michaels doing baseball. I believe you're the best that at the network level has ever done it, and that's in a class of a lot of great guys. And the second thing is, in 30 years ago, boxing, Madison Square Garden or Vegas, Al, I was a sportscaster. I'm a kid. My first job's in Vegas, and I'm covering Sugar Ray Leonard fights. There's nothing like it. I saw a young Tyson. There's nothing that's ever duplicated that. God, I miss that. Well, you know what? To be honest with you, Al, boxing's making a little bit of a renaissance. It's making a little bit of a comeback now.
It is. But, you know, you need – look, in the 70s, you had Ali. You had Foreman. You had Frazier. You had Norton. You had a lot of guys you could mix and match with. So you could always be looking forward to something. And these were household names. In the 80s, you know, in the welter and middleweight classes, you had the great foursome. You had Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Tommy Hearns, Marvin Hagler, and they would go back and forth with each other and have the rematches, and it was something to look forward to. Now, yeah, I mean, the fight in Vegas,
yeah,
in February, okay.
Yeah.
It got some play, but then people, yeah, forget about it the next day. I don't think it could ever be what it is, but it could still be better than it's been over the last 20 years.
Finally, NFL draft starts Thursday. It'll break records. Everybody knows that. If Peter King is a guy that, he's never been as big into the draft as other people and ranking it. I love college football, so I love the convergence of NFL and college. Your thoughts on the draft? Is Tua draftable, and how much will you watch?
I'll watch a lot of it, obviously, because it's part of, you know, what I have to do, and I want to be up to speed when we get to it. You know, the interesting thing, Colin, is I was in Vegas at the end of February, and a couple of the executives at the Wynn Hotel told me, this is in February, that they, on a regular weekend in Vegas, they might have 300 to 350,000 people. On a huge weekend, 400,000. They expected 600,000 people for the draft. They were going to have 600,000 people for the draft in Las Vegas this coming weekend. Of course, Vegas is now dark. Well, it'll be interesting in so many ways to watch. I mean, if they can pull this off without a glitch, it would be, to me, tantamount to getting Armstrong and Aldrin to the moon in 1969 without a problem. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do this. But, you know, part of it is, as Gary Shandling once said, and he was so right, the magic is in the mistakes. So there'll be some mistakes, there'll be some faux pas or whatever. but people will be talking about that. But I'm looking forward to this. Tua is the most interesting case here, obviously, because, you know, does somebody take a chance on him? You can't put your hands on him to examine him. He's out there. And you know this too, Colin, the pre-draft stuff, it's just a bunch of smoke screens out there. You know that. It's just shoot up the fog machine. And, you know, I don't believe anything that I hear or read. And that's what makes it even more fun to watch on Thursday.
Yeah, Mel Kiper, he said this one time. I was having a beer with Mel Kiper. I don't even know if he drinks. I was. I was in New York, and I said, how did the first day of the draft go? He goes, if you can handle being lied to, it's great. You know, this is, he goes, I know at some point people are feeding me information, but I do my homework. I do the best job, and Mel's great at it, but he just said, there's a lot of deception. Look at the left hand is the right hand. The magician makes the coin disappear. So you just deal with it.
You know, Colin, think of how far we've come. When I was a kid and they had the NFL draft, the scouts were getting their information from Street and Smith's college football yearbook. Look where we've come. Now it's crazy.
It is.
Totally.
Good stuff. Yeah, Steelers built a dynasty. There was no combine. Nothing. There were no pro days. They drafted Terry Bradshaw. None of his games in college were even on TV, and there was no pro day. And they,
right.
Yep. That's. We'll all get through this. Al, consider you a friend, and I love having you on. Thank you so much.
See you soon. Take care, Colin.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
A Super Bowl champ in his second season. The first quarterback in the history of the National Football League in his first 8 seasons to have a winning season 8 out of 8 years. And he's tied for the most regular season wins in the first 8 seasons with Tom Brady. No quarterback's ever won more than Brady and Russell Wilson in their first 8 years. 6-time Pro Bowler, 7 of 8 years playoffs. And I honestly thought... I don't know if they could have beaten San Francisco, but I thought had they not fallen apart in the backfield last year physically, I thought they had either the best or the second best team in the NFC along with San Francisco. And my friend Russell Wilson, Super Bowl champ, is joining me. By the way, that must be so hard for you because I really liked that team last year. And then, Russell, the bottom line is that you can't control injuries, and you lost every running back in 2 weeks. I mean, what was that like to go through?
Well, it was definitely tough. First of all, Colin, always great to be on the show, man.
Thanks.
First of all, but obviously it was tough. Going through that last year, just because we had a bunch of guys get injured, a lot of great players. I mean, Disley was having a record-breaking
yes.
year at the beginning of the year. He went down. Then we had a bunch of other guys go down too, as well. And then obviously our running backs. Too as well, and also you think about our left tackle Dwayne, he was out for several weeks. So we had to battle. We kept battling. Honestly, we were a half inch short of overcoming the NFC West there at the end.
Yeah.
And so it was a great matchup, but two great teams going after it.
Yeah. How are you? I do worry a little bit. No OTAs, and I strongly doubt we'd have a 4-game preseason this year, but I don't know anything. But are you keeping in great shape because you've got the, you have the kind of money that you can build your own gym and do your own stuff, and I follow you every day. Are you a little worried about younger players? They may live in an apartment. They don't have the means maybe to have their own gym. Do you think we could have a little bit of an issue on guys coming into camp and Russell, they're just not ready to play?
Oh, for sure. I definitely, that's a huge problem, and I think it could be a problem if guys aren't professional enough. And I think the great thing with our team, which I can speak on our team, is I know guys are really professional about their off-season programs and how they're thinking about it, how they're working, and how they spend their time. And even before this whole Corona thing happened, they were already working. And so that's the great thing. And we've been on a bunch of FaceTime calls and Zoom calls and WebEx calls and everything else, just talking ball already, just us players. And stuff like that. And so we're excited. Guys are dialed in that sense and trying to, win a championship. And, the reality for me is, how I look at it is, potentially in 4 months, the ball is going to be kicked off and it's time to play football. And the expectations are going to be high and my expectations are going to be higher. And I think the reality is that if you want to be great, you have to be consistent. yeah. in your approach, in your habits every day. You can't change. You got to get better. You got to learn how to adjust in the midst of a storm, and you got to remain neutral. And you know, your mindset's got to be neutral. You can't be too high, can't be too low.
Yeah.
And you know, just the great thing right now in the midst of all the storm, I always try to find the goodness in it all is, you know, get to be around your family, you know,
yes.
spend that quality time. That's the blessing in it all. But also at the same time, you have to be able to learn how to be really, really professional in the midst of it.
Yeah, I was just saying, I went on a 3.5-hour drive with my daughter the other day, and we just talked about life, and we talked about her college, and I literally got back and I told her, I said, I feel so lucky that this pandemic has given me this opportunity to go, you know, deeper into our relationship. And I think, you know, I there's so many different, I mean, let's be honest about this. You could potentially play football with no fans. How would that sit with you?
Well, you know, listen, I think, first of all, you know, the world's going through a lot right now, you know, and I think about, you know, my mom's, you know, she's a nurse, clinical leader in Seattle. She's been an ER nurse for a long time before that. And she's helping give these, you know, she's helping, you know, basically build these test sites and stuff like that in Seattle. And she's been helping this one test site in particular and, you know, giving tests and everything else. And, you know, this is real, man. This is really real. It's pretty scary. You know, people are losing their lives, everything else. And so, you know, football, you know, even though it's my mental priority, you know, and trying to get prepared, it's, you know, life is the number one priority. And I think for us players, obviously you see guys like Vaughn and different players, you know, get corona. It's real. You see guys in the NBA and just, you know, not necessarily family members, but you know, you see different people that you know, or you know, or whatever, you know, that they get it. You know, this is very, very real. You have to be very cautious. And I think for us to go back out there, I think it's got to be the right decision. I think it's got to make sense for us to go back out there, because obviously if fans aren't going out there, there's a reason, right? So,
right.
You know, I think that, you know, listen, I definitely want to play football, that's for sure. I love the game. I love the process. But, you know, you also love your family. You love, love the people that you get to lead and inspire. And so you want to make sure that you do everything you can to stay healthy. And I think that's the concern right now.
You know, when I first met you, I think it was at a New Orleans Super Bowl, and you were...
It was.
Yeah.
New Orleans Super Bowl.
And I shook your hand, and I talked to you, and I told my producer, Vince, at the time when you walked away, I said, I'm not sure I've ever met a 23-year-old human that I'm more impressed with. And this may be private, but your parents, you know, they deserve a ton of credit, too. When you look back at your childhood, and did it feel special? Because you had to generate, there had to have been some leadership wisdom in your family, not taking any credit away from you, but you were ready when I watched the Michael Jordan documentary. Mm-hmm. He had a very strong
favorite ever, by the way.
By the way,
that documentary.
Very strong mother, very strong father. And I think it absolutely... Michael was very polished by that. He was ready to be a superstar in the NBA, Russell, and you know a lot of guys aren't. I would predict or guess you had strong people in your childhood.
Oh, for sure. You know, my grandfather, you know, he was the president of Norfolk State for 22 years, you know, and had to lead a lot of people. You know, and then so I was around him and his, you know, boisterous voice, you know, he had talked like this, he'd tell you these stories, and you'd sit down, you know, his lap when you're 6, 7, 8, 9 years old and listen to these stories that he'd tell about amazing athletes and everything else. My dad, you know, went to Dartmouth, graduated from there, went to UVA Law School, you know, president of his class and stuff. My mom went to UVA. So, you know, for me, but my dad also played, you know, got a chance to, you know, try out for the San Diego Chargers, Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow Senior.
Yeah.
You know, got to be with them. He was the last person cut on the team. And
wow.
So he had gotten professional experience. But I think more than anything, you know, what my parents taught me is they gave me an imagination. They really let me believe and write out my visions and talk to me and set goals and write out goals and have a plan. You know, I think a lot of times, a lot of people, a lot of kids, and especially this generation, we don't have a strategy. We don't have a plan, you know, and we don't have this vision. And then we lose it. Because we don't have a plan, we don't understand the work ethic part behind the plan, right? Because if I don't know where I'm going, I don't know what it takes to get there. So we got to know what it takes to get there.
Right.
I think that love, that passion, that respect for the journey, that respect for the process, you got to have that first. and then enjoy the fruits of your labor later. And I think so many people see the flash and this and that, but they don't want to be steady Eddie in the process. They don't want to have to deal with the journey, the blood, sweat, and tears of it all. And I think, I love the studying part of the game. I love the early mornings and the late nights and all the stuff in between. And then come to Sunday, you get to play the greatest game in the world. And, you know, you got millions and millions of people watching you, and you're one of 32 men in the world. Man, it's a gift. But you don't get the gift if you don't want to put the work in. And so there's no substitute for hard work. There's no substitute for hard work. So you got to put the work in. You got to love it. You got to love the work more than even the winning. Because the winning, how you win a lot is winning the process.
Yes.
And that's what you got to love. Yep. That's what I'm obsessed with. I'm obsessed with the process.
By the way,
I'm obsessed with the mentality.
When you're watching Last Dance, and
yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there, and you know, it's funny. I want to be a sensitive guy and an evolved guy, but Michael's a man's man, Russell. I mean, he is confrontational, and he gets after teammates, and he's swearing at teammates. And it's interesting. I don't know how it would play today, but you are in these leadership situations. That is not how you lead. You're much more optimistic. When you watch MJ and he's rough on teammates, what does that take you? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that you can't displace or not understand that he has this unbelievable competitive edge, you know, this unmatchable competitive edge that, you know, I want to bring to the field every single time I play. When teams see me in the fourth quarter, when I'm walking on the field, they already know. I want them to anticipate what's going to happen,
right?
I want them to feel that before I even walk onto the field, right? Same thing in practice. It's got to be the same thing. But that's the work ethic part. That's the competitive nature that you got to bring to every single body, every other person, the other 10 guys in the huddle, the other 11 guys on the other side of the field. They got to feel that presence. But I think more than anything else, what Michael was able to do is, it wasn't that he wasn't positive. He was just positively sure what it took to be great.
Yeah.
And I think you know, some people, communicate differently. You know, to me, at the end of the day, though, you have to be consistent.
Yeah.
What makes a great player, a great leader, a great leader, or a great father or mother, is they're consistent every day, and you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that Michael brought it. He's consistent in his approach,
his effort,
his mentality.
Yeah, no, his effort. He was the most, you know, forget who's the best or whatever. He's probably the most relentless basketball player I've ever seen. Just both ends of the floor, just burning all the time. Russell Wilson's joining us. For the record, let's go back 8 years. You had gone to NC State. I've told you the story before. I saw your first start in college.
Yep.
And I texted Kirk Herbstreit from my couch. I've never done this since. I said, who's Russell Wilson? This kid is insane. I've never done that to any other. I didn't want to bother him, right? And then you go to Wisconsin, very conservative offense, and your numbers are insane. And you don't go in the first round. And you don't go in the second round. And, you know, you're just a little shorter than the classic NFL quarterback. Third round starts. What's going through your head before you're picked?
Well, the crazy thing is, I'm sitting in my uncle's house in D.C. and we're sitting in the basement. And I got no cell phone service down there. First of all, so I'm struggling, and they got the ESPN cameras all over me, and you know, he's got this old phone hooked up into the wall with the long cord and everything else, and he's a lawyer, so the phone keeps ringing. Hey, can I speak to Mr. Wilson? I'm thinking it's a team, you know, in the beginning of the second round, not a team. It's some client. Hey, another call. You know, 10 minutes later. Hey, can I speak to Mr. Wilson? Yeah, this is him. I'm expecting it, you know, maybe the Seahawks or somebody. Sure enough, it's not. So next thing I know, it's the third round. I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay, well, now the camera's on me, and John Gruden's talking about me, and, you know, all this kind of stuff on the TV. And, you know, and so anyways, finally, for that split second, I get one little bar on my phone, and it's 206 area code. I'm like, oh, my God, it's Seattle. And I pick up the phone, and, you know, I was excited. You know, listen, I had been through a baseball draft, you know, a couple times and everything else. I think that ultimately what I knew was the hay was in the barn. I did everything I could in college,
yeah.
And now it was time to go set a new tone in the NFL. And I just wanted a chance. You know, in life, sometimes you just want a chance to do something great. And Coach Carroll, John Schneider, Paul Allen, and rest in peace in him. But, you know, I just wanted the chance. and they gave me the chance. And I was going to do everything I could from a competitive nature, you know, from my mentality to come in and be ready to play. And I was ready from the get-go. I just wanted to give me the ball, let me go play. And at the end of the day, you know, you got to show up. You know, every time you step on the field, every time those lights come on, it's prime time. It's time to show up. It's time to show out. And that's what I wanted to do. And I had great players around me, man.
Yeah.
It helped to have great players around you, guys who were competitive too, and you matched that, and it worked together. And it was a lot of fun. And it still is to this day. And it's been a pretty cool journey, you know, for 8 years. And you know, I feel like I'm just getting started. You know, that's the greatest feeling, when you feel like you're just getting started. And you got great players around you, guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and we just signed Greg Olsen. You got different players around you, so you get excited about that, and you just love the journey of it. So, you know, hopefully we can keep it going.
By the way, you are partnering with a company and helping Feed America. You had a gift recently. I believe it was over 1 million meals. Tell me more about it, because it was incredibly impressive. And when I saw it, I said, we got to get Russell on the show.
Well, yeah, you know, it's been pretty cool journey for Sierra and I during this time, in the sense that just the give back part of it is to be able to serve. You know, I think God puts us on this earth to serve and love and care and give back. And so, you know, for C and I, you know, obviously Seattle was hit hard, man. It was pretty heavy in Seattle. And so what we decided to do, that we really wanted to make a difference, you know, just by trying to see if we could, you know, help with food and everything else. And obviously we partnered up with Feeding America, and we donated 1 million meals to the Seattle area. And
wow.
Then from there, Kenny D, who's, you know, CEO of Wheels Up, and
yep.
father figure to me, kind of,
yeah.
he picks me up. He picks up the phone and calls me and says, hey, man, I was inspired. Let's do something with Wheels Up. And so sure enough, we created this idea called Meals Up. And we wanted to get to 10 million meals, and sure enough, we hit that within, you know, 2 to 3 days.
Wow.
Pretty quickly. And some pretty cool people, you know, helped out too, Tom and different people, and you know, Alex and Jennifer and just different people like that. And so it was cool, and so that was a great thing. And then right now, you know, we have our WCI Wilson Celebrity Invitational, and so we've had to, you know, deal with that process and deal with that. So now we're trying to think of a creative way to do something really cool. So we're in the midst of that, and we really want to make a difference with our Why Not You Foundation, and just try to serve and give back and love. And obviously a lot of people are going through a lot of things, so people need food, people need resources. This is a tough time, you know, and I think one of the important things that we've been in the midst of is I have this company called Limitless Minds, where, you know, it's a partner of Trevor Moad, who's one of the, you know, best mental coaches in the game. He's worked with Alabama for years, Georgia, OKC Thunder, works with the LA Clippers right now. And one of the things that my brother Harry and DJ, we've partnered up together to talk about mentality. And so we're in this process of, you know, communicating and trying to build this podcast out for Danger Talk and Limitless Minds, to where we get to talk to, you know, the unemployed and people that need some influence and impact, and just trying to find creative ways to do, special stuff. And so be on the lookout for that. I may call on you, Colin. I may need you to show up on the show one day.
Yep, absolutely. No question.
Yep.
Wheels Up, by the way. Kenny and those guys are, Miles Rogers and those guys are such class acts.
Yeah, they're great.
Russell, congratulations. I believe you just announced you're expecting a baby boy.
Yeah, we got a baby boy coming, so I'm fired up about that. And I'm a stepdad, which has been the greatest gift that God has given me, besides sea and life, is just, you know, being a stepdad and learning how to, you know, loving somebody that's not necessarily biologically yours, but loving them like they are. And hopefully we become like the Mannings, you know. so that'd be fun, you know. But it'll be cool. You know, the funny thing is in all the baby pictures, as we're trying to, you know, do the ultrasound, Sierra and I were just talking about this. I was just talking to Coach Carroll, you know, earlier today, but I was telling him, you know, all these pictures of the baby, he's got his hand up in the ultrasound picture, and he's got his hand up like he's holding a football right in front of his face. So I think he's ready.
He is ready.
Yeah.
Speaking of the draft, he'll be 20 years from now, he'll be a draft pick right there.
He'll be ready to roll.
Hey, Russell, great talking to you.
Well, it's always a pleasure, man. I appreciate the time, and just keep inspiring people, man, and grateful for what you do.